91.7 WEEM. We welcome you here back to another episode of WEEM Weekly. I'm Sophia Bevan, and today I am joined by
Paul Claxon.
And can you give me a little bit of background about your role at the elementary school and your role in the science fair?
I sure can. I've been a teacher at Pendleton Elementary School for 30 years. I've been running the science fair almost 20 now. The person that ran it before me was Mr. Bob Ely. He did a great job and taught me everything that I know about it. And the science fair is something that I volunteered to do because it's so important for the students to get involved in science and just try and practice and kind of experience it themselves.
What is like the main, I know this is very broad, but what is the main purpose or goal that you're trying to set up for the science fair?
I think it's to kind of fill in that curiosity for kids. Students, they have lessons all the time, but sometimes there's that little missing of curiosity, their own curiosity. And I think the science fair helps them do that. So there's certain kids that are just like, curious, why does this happen? And I said, well, let's set up an experiment. You know, we have three different kinds of things you can do there. We have a demonstration study. So like something that you've learned about and you just want to tell us about it. We've had horses. I mean, kids talking about horses, all the different kinds of horses. We also have experiments, right? Experiments where you're doing a testing of an item. And we have the last one is an invention of some kind, more along the engineering side of things, like how to improve something and then an invention.
What groups like in the elementary school are like allowed to participate in? Is like a club or grade level or?
It is the whole school, first grade through sixth grade. So at Pendleton Elementary School, we have a kind of a little bit of a divided building. We have that little area that's kind of the intermediate school. We are one school, but it's called the intermediate school. Those are fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. All of the first, second, and third graders can participate, and the fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. I do exclude kindergarten. They're still learning how to be students at school, so we kind of exclude them.
How do you introduce the science fair to students?
One time a year. Probably December 1st, right around December 1st, I go through all of the old projects. I get all the old projects out. I just completely cover my room with all the old projects. And then I explain to them what the science fair is and what kind of projects they can do. And I just, I take almost a whole class to do it. So it's because I think it's that important.
I know you mentioned like you start near December 1st. How long does the whole process of the science fair usually take? Just how long?
The first part is doing the introduction to the science fair, and I open up the signups then. I always explain it to students like this. I say, science fair probably would take you 2 or 3 days. Like when my own kids were doing it back a long time ago, it'd take them 2 or 3 days to do the project. But if you want to grow plants or you want to do some of those rock candy crystals or something like that, those take weeks and weeks to do, so you have to start very early. That's why I introduce it December 1st. The science fair is not until January 22nd, Thursday, January 22nd. So, but I really give them that long period of time if they have a project that takes a long time.
Now, is the science fair itself like a one-day thing or like a multi-day thing?
It is a one-day thing. It's that Thursday, January 22nd, like I said. The signups ended January 15th. And then when they come, they are placed with their project in the cafeteria room. We have numerous judges that come and help. In fact, the last few years, we've had a couple of advanced science students from the high school that came and helped. We have retired engineers that help. We have retired teachers that help. I'm a judge also.
What is the day? Like, I know you said like they all come to the cafeteria. How long is the event? Is it a whole day event or how long does it go for?
It takes about 2.5 hours to do the whole event. So, the parents come help set up their projects and then they go away. The parents are not allowed to be in communication with their student while the judges are talking to them. We put them up on the stage. They can watch and see that. Then the judges go around and ask them very specific questions about what did they do? what were their results? How did they, how careful were they when they were doing their project? So it's really just a one-time thing that takes about 2 hours.
When the projects are being judged, are they like, is there a different criteria that they're supposed to meet? Like, what is the like whole like evaluation process of it?
Well, I don't have my form with me, but there's a form that we use that talks about like knowledge of the topic, how thoroughly it was covered, how careful they are with their data collection if they're doing an experiment. So it's how thorough they talked about those things. Trying to think, there's a couple of other little things they do. Now, every judge has a form, so we all score each category the same, like there's a certain number of points, and then it becomes like judges' observations that give them their score.
This is more of like a fun one. Mm-hmm. What has been like, for you said you've been doing this 20 years.
Yes.
What is your favorite project that you've seen a student do?
This is so great. This is such a great question. We had a student that kept talking about how her dad's car remote control unlock wouldn't work very well. It like you had to get really close to the car. Mm-hmm. And she read this article that said that if you hold it to your chin, it turns your brain into a battery, no, an antenna, and then you can get farther away from your car. And so they had pictures and videos. They were at the high school parking lot. They parked the car in the center. Then they measured out a really far distance, and they would check and see if it would beep for them. They got farther and farther and farther away. Now, it's a little different. The part they weren't maybe super careful with was that there might be obstructing things in the way, you know, or obstructions in the way, but it worked so much farther. And I was like, what? That really worked? I can't believe it. So holding the remote control against your chin, if it's really cold out and you got to get to the car fast, hold it against your chin, push the unlock button so you can get in your car faster.
Huh. Well, now you guys know that.
Yes.
What materials and resources do you provide for the students to like help them get started on their project?
Yeah. When I do the introduction, what I have is a big, long list of websites that can help them choose a topic. Then they have to choose that topic. From that point, it really is that they have to get their own materials. When they're choosing their topic, they can also go like the cost of the topic. So they can say a very cheap project that's fast, or they can say an elaborate project that cost is no issue.
Mm-hmm. Like going back to that, you've been doing this for a very long time. Mm-hmm. How has the science fair like evolved since you first started, or even whenever before, to where it is now?
Yeah. A long time ago, probably my fifth year, we had really like 100, 120 kids each year. And it's dropped off a lot. It's really dropped off a lot. I think that everyone's so busy with different activities that the science fair kind of fell off a little bit. Like 2 years ago, we had 40. And then last year we had 30. This year, right now, before the deadline, we have about 17 signed up. So it can be a very small science fair, but I'm going to keep doing it because it's so important.
And this is like, with the winners and stuff, like what is like, do they get any like reward from winning, or
yes,
what is it?
Yes. So each year they get a medal. So they were judged in three groupings. The groupings are fifth and sixth graders compete against each other. And there are three places in that grouping where they get medals. Then third and fourth graders are grouped together. So we judge those two class groups together. And then there's medals for them. And then first and second graders compete against each other. Also, our fantastic Pendleton Elementary PTO donates little prizes and like some science-y kind of things. Like we give out flashlights, we give out magnets, we give out tape measures and pairs of pliers and little sets of pliers. So if they're ever doing something small and they want to do some more science, they've got the little tools to do it.
Is there anything else that you want to say before we wrap up here about the science fair that you feel like people should know?
Science is super important. We have so many things that we need to solve. And one of the most important things we can do is encourage kids to understand how great science is. And maybe they can make some of those changes that we need in the world. That's it.
unfortunately, it's going to wrap up our time here. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been great. And hopefully you guys are a little bit more excited about the elementary school science fair. Thank you for watching. We'll get back to you guys with a few more great segments. Leave it to 917 WEEM to have the greatest social media in the state. Check us out on our Instagram, X, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube for behind-the-scenes content, broadcast information, and more at 917 WEEM.
What are you waiting for? Follow us today.
Welcome back to another episode of WEEM Weekly. Today, I'm Callie Oxier, and today I'm joined by
Frau Claxon
and Frau Holt.
What do you guys do within the school?
I teach German and I teach world history. So some of my students don't know me as Frau Claxon. I'm just Mrs. Claxon, two periods a day. I have mostly freshmen in those classes.
I teach German 1 and German 2 at the high school, and I teach German 1 and world languages at the middle school.
So you switch between both schools?
Yeah. So in the morning, I'm at the middle school. In the high school, I'm in the, here at the afternoon. That was not a good sentence.
So there is a Germany and Italy trip planned, if I am correct.
That's correct.
So will you give me like a quick rundown about the trip and how you came about it?
Yeah, sure. So I've been taking trips that my husband and I, Mr. Claxon, have organized for a couple of years. It's a lot of extra work. And my colleagues have been taking trips with EF, which stands for Education First, for years, and really liking that experience. And so I thought, well, let's try it. So EF is making the arrangements, and we and some other fellow teachers are recruiting just kids to come with us. And it's about a 10-day trip, and it starts in Rome. And honestly, we spend more time in Rome than we do in Germany, but that's okay. I teach history too. And in Rome, we're going to see the Vatican and the Pantheon and the Colosseum and we're spending quite a bit of time in Rome. On our way to Austria and Germany, we're going to stop in Florence and spend a day there. We're going to see the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and we're going to spend a day in Innsbruck, Austria, and then spend a day in Munich. That's the plan.
So is this your first trip you're going on, Frau Holt?
Yeah, so this will be my first trip going with students, and it'll only be like the second trip I've ever really been on overseas. I've only done my study abroad, so it'll be an interesting new experience for me. She's very seasoned. I'm not.
Yeah.
I need to be seasoned.
I bet that'll be really fun. Yes. What made you choose to go to Italy as well as Germany?
You know, I asked the lady at EF. I said, listen, whenever I take a trip and it's just me making plans, I go to Germany. I know Germany. I speak the language. But I'm offering this trip to my history students, too. So I said to her, you tell me, where do these kids want to go? And she said, Italy. And I want to take a big group. And we're close. We've got 22 students at this point. If we get 30 students, we get a bus to ourselves. And that's my goal. So I'm trying to get my new freshman that came to me this semester that didn't hear about the trip last semester to join in. And if we get 30 kids, then we get our own bus and we don't have to mess with students from another school.
So that kind of adds on to it. Who all can attend this trip? Like, is it just your German students, or can it be anybody within the school?
Well, we're opening this up to essentially anybody in the school. So history students, students that are just interested in going overseas, students who want to, I don't know, become more in tune with different cultures, things like that. They're all more than welcome to join.
And yeah. The only kids that wouldn't be eligible to go would be current seniors, because they'll be long gone.
Yeah.
But this year's juniors, who will be seniors next year, they also can join. And we have a couple of seniors that have signed up sort of as their big senior trip.
For what is the price for this trip?
Oh, well, we're going to have another meeting in which people can find out about the price. Any trip like this is intimidating in terms of the price. So we try not to scare people off before they've even given it some thought. But on February 24th, I'm going to have another meeting, invite parents, invite students to come and ask all their questions and learn all the specific details, get inspired, and hopefully sign up.
Yeah. How long is the trip going to last?
About 10 days.
When is it going
to
be?
Real early in June. We've told her to set it up so that it cannot possibly conflict with graduation. But as soon as the day after graduation, we might leave. And I imagine it won't be much more than a day or two after graduation, because the closer we are to the beginning of June, the less money they have to spend on flights. So anytime I've ever had somebody arrange something for me, we've left very, very quickly after that window of travel opens.
Is that this year or next year?
Not this year. Next
year. So 2027?
Yeah, 2027.
Where in, are you staying in hostels? Are you staying in hotels? Like, what will the living arrangements look like throughout the 10 days?
Well, we will be staying in hotels, which is a little bit different than when we've gone in the past, or you've gone in the past, because you guys try to do hostels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But hotels, and we'll have like roomies, and there's lots of different situations that you guys could have. Hotels. It'll be a bit fancier.
Yeah. So you had brought it up earlier about having a bus to ourselves if we get 30 students on there. So I'm assuming that you're just taking a coach bus to location to location?
Yeah, buses from location to location. And that ends up costing us a bit more money, but it also means we get to get to more things quicker. So in the past, when I've arranged trips, we've taken subways and trains, and I love doing that because it teaches kids how to learn how to use those things, and hopefully gain the confidence to come back and do that on their own. But this is a quick trip. So when we hop on a bus, they can take us directly to where we need to go. And so we get everywhere quicker, see more quicker.
What do you think the longest bus ride is going
to
be?
I asked her not to put too big of bus rides in it. And she said that this, with this trip plan, the longest bus ride is like 3.5-4 hours. So not terrible. I said, hey, we're from the Midwest. We can do 3.5-4 hours easy.
I feel like that's not bad.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, especially being in Germany and somewhere else, like besides Indiana, you're going to be wanting to look out the window a lot. So I feel like a 3-hour bus ride, I mean, it sounds bad, but I feel like once you're in a different country completely, I feel like it's not that bad because it'll be all new to you.
It's not bad. The scenery out the windows is interesting. And also, we're so busy. We're doing so much. It's nice to have some downtime where you can just sit on the bus, zone out to your music, send a couple texts to your friends, and be ready for the next stop.
How big will the group be?
Well, hopefully about 30. Frau Holt and I are definitely going. My husband's planning on going, although you never know. He might bail if we get some more. But Mrs. Stevens is planning on going, and maybe even Mrs. Fawcett. If we get up to 30, then we may have those four teachers and probably also Mr. Claxon. So
if students who sign up and it exceeds the amount of 30, would you have to cut those students off, or would you somehow make room for them?
That's a good question. I don't honestly know. I've not traveled with EF before. I know that she told me that if we made it up to 30, that meant we wouldn't have any other kids on the bus, like from other schools. But I don't know if we have to cut it off at 30. That's a good question.
What school students would you be looking at if we don't make it to that 30 mark?
And they would put us with anyone else who was traveling the same trip at roughly the same time.
Okay.
So if that happened, if we were, let's say we're traveling with a group of students from North Carolina, we would wait until they're out of school and then all leave at the same time.
So it can be anybody just traveling Germany, not just like an Indiana school.
Okay. Yeah, it could be anybody.
How many chaperones are there going to be? I know you touched on this.
There are, at this point, I think only two, besides the teachers, two parents that have signed up. But the parents of any students who sign up are welcome to join us.
What can somebody expect to get out of this trip? Like, is it going to be all learning, or is there going to be like time to themselves? Is there going to be days where they can just go upon the streets of Greece
Rome.
Rome and just kind of shop or whatever they want?
Well, because we're going to be on like a bus tour, like, yeah, you're going to have some freedom to go do some shopping, like in maybe some centers that we go to. We'll see lots of different tourist attractions and sites. You know, Frau Claxon listed a few. There are lots. We're all going to be eating like lunch and dinner and things all together. That could be some downtime. I imagine we could maybe, like, if we were close to some shops, could do some shopping there.
Yeah, just to clarify, lunch is...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, lunch is on... Students have to come up with lunch on their own. So that right there is some free time.
Yeah.
And it might be free time in sort of a food court sort of area. Or it might be, okay, you've got 2 hours in Munich, go find lunch. We're never going to have a day where people have the whole day to themselves. We like students to check back in with us a little bit more than that. But definitely a little bit of free time every day. And you know, they haven't told me exactly what the activities are, but EF works with school groups. They know kids like to be active and do fun things. They're not going to send you to a bunch of boring museums. There'll be a couple of museums in there,
yeah,
but they won't plan to have us there for the entire day.
You had talked about a meeting this upcoming February. So will there be more meetings like that to where parents can maybe get more information on it and students get more information on it?
Yeah. Well, students can always come talk to any of the teachers that are involved to get more information. We had one meeting already earlier this year. I know there were at least a couple of parents that couldn't come because of conflicts. I think on February 24th, there really aren't any conflicts. So that's the night to come and ask questions. But even again, if they're not able to come to that meeting, all they need to do is come ask one of us for the information. And also, there's once they get that information sheet from us, they can find all the information online from EF.
Yeah. So with your position currently having somebody new planning this for you, is it like, are you looking for at something different than your previous Germany trips?
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. One, I like the idea of involving my world history students. And two, they take the planning off of my shoulders.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're new to me because I generally, and my husband generally, do the planning. And but they're not new by any stretch. They've been doing what they do since the 70s.
Because I believe, Mrs. Lauerman, when they go to like Spain and stuff, that's where they.
Exactly. And Monsieur Stevens as well. He usually, although he's traveled some other companies too, he often travels with EF, and both of them have told me very positive things about traveling with them.
So has it been easy so far?
Yeah.
That's good. If people want to contact you about the trip and maybe have questions, where can they reach either of you?
You can always email me. It's kholt@smcsc.com.
And I'm aklaxon@smcsc.com.
And then obviously I'm assuming that they can just come to you during passing periods 100%. Or just going to ask you questions.
Yeah, yeah. If they don't know me or Mrs. Holt or Frau Holder, they can just come up and say, hey, can I get one of those flyers about that trip?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll happily give it to them.
Thank you so much for joining me for this interview. It was a pleasure. Again, I'm Kelly Oxier and I was joined by
Frau Klaxon
and Frau Holt.
Tired of boring old podcasts? Flip it around with Arabian Rundown, our bi-weekly podcast posted every other Thursday. This isn't your typical podcast. Get ready to dive into wild conversations, fun topics, and awesome conversations with the WEEM podcast staff. Listen to Arabian Rundown anywhere you get your podcasts. Watch the video version on our YouTube at WEEM Media.
WEEM. Welcome back to a WEEM weekly segment. I'm your host, Julia Walls, and I'm here with
Brad Dixon, head swim coach, Pendleton Heights, boys and girls.
So my very first question is, how long have you been involved in swimming and in coaching?
Well, swimming is lifelong. My parents were very big. They both had accidents as children in the water, and so my brother and I were thrown into the water at a very early age, and they couldn't get us out of it. We embraced racing at a very early age, and so I've done it since I was probably 3 or 4. And then fast forward through high school and some college, and then with my own kids, I had a daughter who swam competitively for 14 years until she graduated. And then once she graduated, kind of got the bug to want to be on deck and coach. I'd always wanted to try it. Got the opportunity as middle school about 4 years ago and did that for a year, and then joined the high school team as an assistant. And then when coach, Amanda stepped aside, took over the head coaching spot. So, all in all, 4 years of actual coaching, but lifelong, around the deck and around swimming in general.
I think, if my math is correct, you've been my coach since when I started middle school swimming.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was that your first year?
Yeah, 7th grade for you, right?
Yeah, 7th grade.
Yeah, so yeah, so we've had a long journey so far.
Yep. When did you start getting ready to, like, when do you start getting ready to start the swimming season? Like, what are some of the things you do to prepare technically and mentally?
Well, it's funny because pretty much the day we walk off the deck at the end of sectionals, or hopefully for some people at the end of state this year, we'll start already. Coach Catherine, my assistant, and I will spend considerable amount of time looking at the what went right, what went wrong, what we want to do better next year, what we want to build on. And then, you know, so, you know, we're already ready to go. I mean, we'll take a little bit of downtime. We both also coach with the club. So we're talking about, okay, we're doing this with club. How can we apply this to the high school team next year? How can we use it as motivation? And then mentally, I get away for a month at least to get away from everybody. So, and reset, and then I'm ready to go again.
Does any of that preparation go into like specific swimmers?
Sometimes. There are times when, you know, there, one thing about swimming that's somewhat unique is that you definitely have a varying level of abilities and desire. And so there are times when you want to cater a little bit to make sure that you're getting the best out of each individual you can. Sometimes it's hard when you have a group the size of ours. But we try to, you know, break things down enough that we get some individualized work in that way.
Why, in your opinion, would you say swimming is a useful skill and important sport?
Well, actually, I'll back it out from just swimming and just say sports in general. Firm believer that sports are a way for you to learn at a young age how to interact with other people, how to work on projects and work on things as a group. And even though swimming is fairly individualized, you do need to have some level of connection with other people. Otherwise, the sport will drive you mad because essentially you are in your head the entire time in practice. You know, your face is in the water, so it's you and your thoughts. So you need your team around you to kind of help you understand, you know, help socialization. And it just allows you to, grow as a person. I believe, I believe that, you know, everyone that I know who have played sports versus those who don't play sports, their success growing into adults tends to be accelerated, by being a member of a team.
Yep. Now moving into like the actual like swimming season, how do you usually structure your workout sets?
So, you know, when we start the season out, we obviously, we have different groups of people, club swimmers, non-club swimmers, fall athletes, you know, et cetera. So there's a different level of conditioning that we have to work through. So we structure ourselves to the point where we help, you know, we're helping the people who haven't been in the water for a year or so get back in slowly to not create injury, to not over fatigue muscles right off the bat. The ones who've been in the water, with the club or, you know, or in swimming, you know, we may go up a notch already, you know, they may ratchet up a little bit. Fall athletes, when they come back in, they're in some level of shape, but they're not necessarily in swimming shape. So it's still the same kind of, we have to build them up. So
how does like strength and endurance building go into that?
If you're not if you don't have a level of strength, swimming is very difficult. You know, you can have the greatest technique in the world, but if you don't have the strength to pull faster, to kick faster, harder, you're going to be a nice swimmer, but you're not going to be a fast swimmer. So the idea around, you know, a lot of the work that we do, stretching, we're in the weight room 3 mornings a week. You know, some of the sets, whether they feel like they are or not, are intended to build muscle tone, build, you know, that just build that mass a little bit. You don't want to be the Hulk, but you also don't want to be a beanpole. You want to have some muscle on there so that you can actually pull through the water, because, I mean, you literally are pulling through something that wants to resist you.
Yeah.
So
I can kind of think of a few swimmers we have that kind of remind me of the Hulk.
There are a few, yes.
how would you describe the difference between what you have your swimmer swim for practice at the beginning of the season versus the end of the season?
Well, I mean, most of it's load and speed. So if you can think of at the beginning of a season, someone who's not in conditioning yet, I'll give you an example. Say we're doing a set of 100s. We're doing 10 100s, you know, which is four laps. We may put a time structure around that of 2 minutes. As we build through the season, that time's going to drop. Ultimately, when we get towards our taper time at the, you know, towards sectionals, you know, for some of the swimmers, that's going to drop down to a minute 20, a minute 10. Others may be down to 140, 130, but as you build up, what you'll find is you see that those times become, oh, that's easy now, because my endurance, my strength, my stamina, all of it has built up over the year. So
after meets, what do you usually work on? Like the practice after your meets, what do you usually like to work on?
It's usually we like to try to touch on the things that we saw. You know, if you, for example, you know, you see Julia bobbing her head on breaststroke.
Yeah, which happened at the meet before now.
You know, and, you know, things like that, you know, we'll focus on, you know, general reminders, you know, let's not bob. You know, if we didn't see turns that were great, we're going to work on turns. You know, after our meet last night, for example, there's a couple of guys who are going to do some turns today because they were pretty not characteristic for them. So try to dial them in, try to clean up some of that. That's really what we try to do. And then obviously, you know, when we look at times, we want to try to say, okay, well, how can we push you a little bit more to advance that time, to make that time better the next time?
Yeah, usually during the meets, our events are usually scheduled out. Like mine, I have like two at the beginning and then two at the end.
Right.
After the events, every swimmer comes up to you, our coach, and asks like, how did we do? Mm-hmm. What can we do better? Because I swim the IM, so I swim all the strokes. Mm-hmm. And I have the 100 breaststroke after that. So I want to know what I can do better on my breaststroke so that for my 100, I can do that better.
Correct. Yep.
When you see your team during meets not doing so great, like how do you react? How do you try and help your team get better?
Yes, this feels like a loaded question. A lot of time, I mean, and you've seen it. A lot of times if we're really performing bad, I'll huddle you guys up. And we'll have a conversation, just kind of refocusing. I mean, we all go through the same kind of thing. We have things that go on during the day. You know, you guys are in school, you know, we have work, we have all of these outside, forces that are kind of vying for our brain space. And sometimes people just aren't in it right away and just have to be kind of reminded that we're in a pool, we're supposed to be racing. You know, there have been times when it's been a little louder than other times. But I've found that just getting everyone back together in a collective group, hey, let's get going, has actually been good. Every single time it's happened, we've turned around and had a better back half of the meet. So.
I think I'm going to start leaning towards now the end of the season.
Okay.
So what is the difference between the importance of one-on-one meets, like individual two team meets, versus conference and sectionals, which is the big meets?
So to me, the dual meets are an opportunity for us to continuously try ourselves. The conference meets and sectionals, for example, those are your bigger, this is the showcase. You know, it's everything you've built up for. These are the meets. We use conference as kind of the mid-season checkpoint to see where we're at. And then sectionals is the, okay, how did we do? And are we going to perform well enough at sectionals to move people onto state? And the dual meets are those kind of in-between checkpoints. You know, it's like, we're not going to get faster every single meet. That's just not going to happen. We're going to hit plateaus. You know, people are going to be sick and, you know, they'll miss a couple days. Then trying to come back in and trying to race is difficult. And so, you know, times are going to adjust. But we can see that, for example, this year at conference, we had between the boys and girls teams, we had an almost 99% time drop across the board. I mean, every single person, every single relay dropped time. The ones that didn't had circumstances that kept them from doing it, which are understandable. And things that we can adjust and move on for sectionals. Because ultimately sectionals is where we want our massive time drops. That's why we do a 2-week preparation prior to that. No meets. We're doing workouts specifically catered around getting faster, getting better for that final 2 weeks.
After conference, as you said before, it's like the middle of the season marker. How do you prepare our team for sectionals?
Yeah, we start. This year was the first year that we did a minor taper going into conference just to kind of help give us a little bit of a bump and see how our bodies responded to it. And, you know, they responded beautifully. It was actually, we were very happy with that. And so now that we are building towards sectionals, you know, the way that we go into that 2 weeks of kind of specialization, you know, through our taper, you know, that approach will be a slightly different. It'll be slightly more intense, you know, bigger intensity, less yardage, but yet more intentional about how we go about it. And I'm confident that at the end of it, we're going to see another round of huge time drops.
Once sectionals are over, how do you personally feel?
I'll tell you what, the day of sectionals, as we get back, everyone is off the bus. I'm exhausted. Sectionals is a very, you know, it's 2 days. You know, we have a preliminary day and then we have the finals day. Those 2 days are the most fun, but the most exhausting days, just because your emotions go high, they go low. I mean, I feel for every swimmer who doesn't achieve what he or she is looking for. We're right there with them when they achieve what they're looking for. I mean, we're just as excited as you guys are. And we're just as sad as when you guys are. You know, we're never mad about it. We're disappointed for you because we know that your goals were high. And so at the end of that, I mean, it's just a complete, you know, I don't schedule anything that day, the rest of that evening. It's like, I'm just going to go home and we're going to veg, and drain, and then, you know, we'll pick back up the next day or two and, you know, kind of look back at everything and kind of evaluate.
I know last year, when I did sectionals, I dropped 10 seconds, which is a lot of time.
It was a huge time
on one of my events. And I was super proud of myself, even though I didn't make it to the second day. I was super happy that I dropped that much time.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I hope that we convey to you guys, you know, that yes, we want you on the second day. We want you there. We want you competing there, but we also want you to achieve the goals you're looking for. That time drop, for example, that story was one of several last year. You know, huge time drops, speed, you know, you guys looked great. You felt good. And the looks on your faces sold it for us. I mean, you guys knew you did something cool. You did something that you were shooting for. And, you know, absolutely, we want to support that and then build it on for next year. So this year, we're expecting time drops again. So
I don't know if I can beat my 9-second drop at conference. Get into our last couple questions. Any specific improvements and declines that you've seen throughout this season, seeing as how our season isn't over yet, but have you seen any improvements so far?
A ton, actually. I think I've seen improvements in every single person across the board. Some may be minor, some may be major. You know, we've had, you know, we, for example, you know, I'm going to use one of our freshmen one of our freshman girls, never swam before. She kind of swam a little bit, but she wasn't a competitive swimmer by any stretch. And the time changes and the strength and speed that she's showing, it has been great, you know. And we've got on the boys' side, you know, same thing. We've got people that, you know, one freshman in particular who wasn't sure he wanted to swim anymore, gave it a try, and over the course of the season so far has dropped almost 35 seconds in one event. Now, it's the 500, so it's a super long event, so there's a lot of time to drop. But the amount of, because I coached him as a club swimmer a couple of years ago as well, so the amount of change in his strength, his skill, and his ability has been awesome to see. So, and I could literally go through every single one of you guys, every single one of the swimmers, saying you guys, and I can point out something very specific about every single body, every single person's change and how they've grown and matured and how they handle things differently. Because every single one of you guys has, continues to blow us away. So
any last minute thoughts you would like to share about our swimmers?
I hope Julia drops another 9 seconds at sectionals. I love this team. I think we have a very good core group of, or not core group, an entire group of people. Not just swimmers, but just people. We don't have internal strife. We don't have, battles. And it's rare because we are a boys and girls team. We're a mixed team. And to have the synergy that we have and to have the group of people who respect each other. Now, of course, you guys are high school kids. You're going to make fun of each other. You're going to say dumb things. And we all know that what's said on the pool deck sometimes, we all just shake our heads and are like, okay, well, let's move on from that. But every single person is generally a good person. And, I think are going to grow up to be incredible adults. So,
all right. Well, fortunately, that is all the time we have for this segment of WEEM Weekly. I was Julia Walls, your host, and I was joined by
Brad Dixon.
And we will see you guys in the next segment.